This morning, our speaker is Rabbi Rami Shapiro. As you know, Rabbi Shapiro was a congregational rabbi for many years, and he now devotes his time to writing and teaching. He received rabbinical ordination from the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, and he holds a PhD from Union Graduate School. Many of you read his blog called Beyond Religion and the column he writes for Spirituality and Health magazine. Rabbi Shapiro is a well-known author and has published a number of books. His most recently published book is called Perennial Wisdom for the Spiritually Independent. Today, Rabbi Rami will speak on the topic, the Moses Deception, how we got the Ten Commandments and why it matters. Let's welcome Rabbi Rami Shapiro.
Good morning. So you have the handout for today. Thank you. No point in my simply reading the handout to you, but this way, if I don't give you all the parts, you'll have them all to look at later. Let me just take a second and talk about why I want to talk about this. I absolutely love the Bible. I think it's a phenomenally interesting book. I think it's a human document. I don't think God had anything to do with it, because I don't think God has anything to do with anything, because I don't understand God in that way. So it's just another piece of human creativity. Yet in the West especially, it has tremendous power, and it has for thousands of years. And we can't ignore it. I mean, a lot of people just say, ah, it's the Bible. But it doesn't work that way. The Bible shapes our culture. It shapes our lives. Whether it shapes it by saying, I'm living by this book, which no one really does, thank goodness. And or it's because I'm living against this book. You know, we either embrace it or react against it, even if we pretend to be neutral about it. We're not really. It's still part of the culture. We can't escape it. So what I like to do often, and in this case specifically, is to deconstruct it, to take things that we think are in the Bible and simply read the Bible and discover they're not there. So what we're going to work with today is the teaching of the great biblical sage Cecil B. DeMille in his version of the Ten Commandments that has shaped everybody's understanding of the Ten Commandments except the person who wrote the Bible, and none of it is in there. So what's the Cecil B. DeMille version, right? So Cecil B. DeMille has Charlton Heston's Moses climbing up the mountain and getting the Ten Commandments and then coming down and seeing that the people are worshiping the golden calf, and he smashes the tablets with the Ten Commandments on them, and then he has to go back up the mountain and gets another set of Ten Commandments, and those are the Ten Commandments that we plaster on our courthouses until, you know, people like Carol Sue get up there and fight and try to get them down. The problem is that isn't in the Bible. So that's what I want to look at. How did we actually get the Ten Commandments? So we're going to start, and like I said, we're just going to read parts of this. How many of you, maybe anybody here, has anyone ever been to Mount Sinai where the Ten Commandments were given? Now, so when it was part of Israel, I've been there multiple times during that period when Israel was in control of the Sinai Desert. Now it's part of Egypt, and I don't know if anyone takes that trip, because it's probably far more dangerous. But let me tell you that the Mount Sinai is a treacherous climb. And I did it when I was young. I did it when I was in my late teens and early 20s, and I've done it two or three times, I don't know how many times. And you have to start early in the morning, because it's an hours climbing. And by the time you get even near the top, the sun is out, it's the desert, it's brutal, and you're really dying. When you get to the very top, there's a little chapel there. As far as I know, at least when I was climbing, there's no kiosk. Better a kiosk than a chapel. You should get to the top and they could sell you water for $100 a bottle. Yes, so you get to the top and then you got to come down. And when you come down, there's stairs. Not an escalator, sadly, but stairs. And the stairs were built by monks who, we don't know what they did or who they were specifically, but they were monks living at Santa Catarina, St. Catherine's Monastery, at the base of Mount Sinai, and for whatever penance they were, you know, they had to do whatever reason they had to do penance for, the penance was carving stairs into Mount Sinai, but only going down. You have to climb up the hard way, and then you can walk down the stairs. And then when you get to the bottom, there's the monastery, and the monastery is a very beautiful place. And it's worth visiting if you could ever visit, but it's worth looking online. They have an amazing collection of icons, and the burning bush is there. Well, no, seriously. There's a bush, and it's the burning bush. It's not burning now, but it is the burning bush because there's a sign in French, Hebrew, English, and Arabic saying burning bush, and these arrows pointing right to it. So it's a very cool place. It's nothing to do with my talk, but when the monastery was built in the, I guess, like 4th, 5th century, you couldn't go outside the monastery walls to bury your dead monks because it was just too wild out there, and the veteran were out there, and there was just the animals would eat the monks. So what they would do is they would allow the bodies to just rot in the monastery, in this special place. And then when the flesh had all fallen away, they would take the heads, the skulls, and put them in a special vault. And then the body bones, they would just throw over the wall. It was the head that mattered. And so you can go in there, and there's a special place, and it's just got centuries and centuries of monk heads. And you can go there. So the first time I visited, the monastery was closed for repairs. But I had traveled specifically to see the monk head, and I was going to go in, so I broke in to the monastery. I was on a tour where there was a bus and everything. They were all having water and whatever they were doing. And I ran away, and I ran into the monastery, and there was no one around, so I slipped in. And then you can figure out, I forget the word for monk heads, but there's a name for this place, and I saw where it was, and I followed the directions, and I got there. And I walked in, and when you walk in, there's this music, and it's like, dun 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 dun. That's what it sounded like to me. I don't know if there was really music, but it had that Indiana Jones feel. And then there's this giant skeleton of a monk in armor. You know, bigger than Jane, I think. But this really scary monk. And, you know, the fact that he's got no flesh on his bones, it's definitely Indiana Jones stuff. And you have to get by him, and then you have to go in. So I slipped by that guy. And I went to see the heads, and they're all over the place, just heaps of heads. And then I swear on St. Catherine's grave that I heard from the big guy going, "No!" And then, you know, me and short stack, we ran out of there as fast as possible. And I got back to the bus. But if you ever get to do it legally, which I have done subsequently, it's definitely cool. All right. So, enough for my tour.
Prior.
Yeah. So let's get to the text. So, Moses now is 80 years old, right? So he is not a spring chicken. And I'm telling you, as a young 20-something, climbing the mountain is brutal. Moses is 80. So our image from Cecil B. DeMille is God calls him up to the mountain. So the first thing God does is God comes down, before he calls Moses up, God sort of descends in the mountain in this big cloud, and the people hear this voice, and the voice says, "Do not come near the mountain." Okay, fine. Don't come near the mountain. Everyone goes, "Well, get it. It's like scary. There's lightning and all this stuff, and the big voice, don't come near the mountain." So then God calls Moses up to the mountain. And he calls him up, and if you're following this, I've got all these things written for you in the gray part of the thing. So it's chapter 19, verse 20. And it says, "God descended upon Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and he summoned Moses to the top of the mountain. And Moses ascended," this 80-year-old guy climbing up there. "And God said to Moses, 'Descend, warn the people, lest they break through to God to see, and a multitude of them will fall.'" So here's the setup. He's already told the people, don't come near the mountain. Then he calls Moses up. And when Moses gets to the top, he says, "Now go down and tell the people not to come near the mountain. If I were Moses, I would go, are you kidding me? I dragged my butt all the way up here so you could tell me to go all the way down just to repeat something you already told the people when you were up on top of the mountain? No, and besides, they can hear you. Why don't you just say again, reminder, do not climb the mountain. He doesn't do that. So Moses is commanded to come down. So Moses goes down. God says, descend. This is verse 24. God says to Moses, go, descend. Then you shall ascend with Aaron with you. But the priests and the people, they shall not break through. I mean, it's really, he's overemphasizing this, but it's just the up and downness of it that I want you to get. So verse 25, Moses descended to the people and said to them. Now, what he's supposed to say to them is what? Don't go up the mountain. What he says to them is, God spoke all these statements saying, I am the Lord your God who has taken you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall have no other God. In other words, he recites the Ten Commandments. God didn't give him the Ten Commandments. God gave him one commandment. Go down. Where is he getting this? The Bible simply says in 1925, when Moses descended to the people, and he said to them, now my Bible, my English translation, has in parentheses it. He said it to them. But the only it that can refer to is the commandment, go down. He should have gone down and said, God told me to come back down and remind you not to climb the mountain. But that isn't what he does at all. So the following thing, even though it opens in this is chapter 20, verse 1, even though it opens in verse 1 with God spoke all these statements saying, this is actually, because the Bible has no quotation marks and other diacritical marks, this is Moses speaking, because it says Moses descended to the people and said this, or said it to them, or just said to them. Next chapter, verse 1, God spoke all these statements saying, the only reason we think God gave the Ten Commandments that we put on the courthouse walls is because Moses said falsely that God said the following 10 things. But God never said it. Nowhere in the Bible does God say these things, or nowhere in Exodus does God say these things. In Deuteronomy, when they repeat the things, Moses is just telling us the story. So even there, God doesn't say them. But you get it? I mean, the whole thing is a scam. So, the Ten Commandments, and they're the Ten Commandments we know, so I'm not going to repeat those. You have some sense of those. Then, what happened to, where are the tablets? The tablets don't show up until chapter 24. See, sadly, this is a Unitarian group, and there's no Bibles. You know? If this were a church, well, actually, even most churches don't have Bibles. If this were a synagogue, everyone would be able to pull a Bible out of the pew. So you'll have to take my word for it. That's why I wrote it down for you, so you can double-check my chapter and verse. But in chapter 24, verse 12, we get the following. God said to Moses, ascend to me to the mountain. You can hear Moses going, oh no, not again. Because he's going to talk to Moses, but he already is talking to Moses when Moses is on the bottom of the mountain, right? Because it says, and God said to Moses, come up so I can tell you something. If I were Moses, I go, hey, you're talking to me now. Save me the trip. I'm 80 years old. Come up the mountain. So Moses has to go up the mountain again. And God says, and then remain there, and I shall give you the stone tablets and the teachings and the commandment that I have written. Notice it's singular. To teach them, the people. Moses stood up with Joshua, his servant, and Moses ascended to the mountain of God. To the elders, he said, wait for us here until we return to you. Behold, Aaron and Hur, H-U-R, as in Ben-Hur, this is Ben's son. So son of Hur, you can't have Ben-Hur and Moses in the same scene because I think they're both played by Charlton Heston, right? So Aaron and Hur are going to remain behind. Whoever has a grievance should approach them. In other words, while I'm up on the mountain, if you people have a problem, talk to my brother. I'm out of commission for a while. So Moses goes up the mountain, and a cloud covers the mountain. The glory of God rested upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. God calls to Moses on the seventh day from the midst of the cloud. The appearance of glory was like a consuming fire on the mountain before the eyes of the children of Israel. Moses arrived in the midst of the cloud and ascended the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. So it's a little confusing because it sounds like he goes up on the mountain and he has to wait 6 days before God calls him. And then he goes up the mountain again. So the logic is missing. But the idea is he goes up to get these tablets after he's given the Ten Commandments. Not the way we're taught it or the way we remember it from pop culture, which is he gets the tablets with the Ten Commandments on them. So then what happens? So in chapter 25, God gives Moses all kinds of laws, but not the Ten Commandments. So when he comes up to get the tablets, the laws that may be around the tablets, and it's going to turn out that it's not even these laws, but if there's going to be tablets with commandments on them, these are the commandments that you might think are on them, and they have nothing to do with the 10 that we put on courthouses. I'm not going to read all of them, but it's speak to the children of Israel and let them take a portion from every man whose heart motivates him, and it shall be my portion. In other words, if they're motivated to make donations, see Jill. But, you know, if you want to make a donation, this is a good time to make a donation. This is one of the laws God gives. This is what I'm looking for. Take gold and silver and copper and turquoise and purple and scarlet wool, linen and goat hair. Never does God ever say, and for those who can't afford it, you can donate your time. He's not interested in your time. He's eternal. He wants your stuff. Right? So, you never know why he needs that, but, you know. So, none of these laws are the Ten Commandments. Then, in chapter 31, which is now seven chapters later, in chapter 31, finally, you get the tablets. Now, it was chapter 12 where Moses gave us the Ten Commandments. The tablets show up, you know, tens of chapters later. So, they're about something else entirely. So, it says in 31... verse 18, it says, when God is talking to Moses, and it says, when God had finished talking, he gave Moses the two tablets of testimony, stone tablets inscribed by the finger of God. So God actually wrote these with his finger. And maybe what he wrote was these commandments, but I don't think so. This is what some of them are. You must observe my Sabbaths. You shall observe the Sabbath because it's holy. Don't do any work. It's all about the Sabbath. That's the main thing. And then it says, the children of Israel shall observe my Sabbath as a covenant forever. And in fact, it says nothing else other than the Sabbath stuff. So it's just one commandment to keep the Sabbath. But it never says that's what he wrote on the tablets. It just says when he finished talking to Moses, he gave Moses two tablets. That's chapter 31. That's chapter 30. Chapter 31. Then he goes down with the tablets, and then he breaks those tablets. All right? Whatever's on them, we don't know. Then he has to go back up the mountain, which he does in chapter 34. And in chapter 34, he gets the actual commandments. So let me share the real commandments with you. I'm not saying I would want these on my courthouse either, but at least if they did it, it would be the real one. So he climbs up again, and this time he has two blank tablets. God wrote the first ones. God, in fact, must have made the tablets and then gave them to Moses the first time. Then Moses breaks them, so Moses has to carve his own tablets, and then he chisels into the tablets the commandments that God is giving him here. So, he says, behold, this is God speaking, I seal a covenant before your entire people. I make distinctions that have never been made in the entire world, blah, 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 blah. This is what I want you to do. Number one, you shall not prostrate yourself to an alien god. Okay, so don't bow down to other gods. You shall not make yourselves molten gods. You shall observe the festival of matzah, that's Passover. Every first issue of the womb is mine. So, you know, baby calves and everything that comes out of a mother belongs to God. Now, what that meant exactly, did they slaughter the firstlings to God? Maybe. I mean, that's pretty common practice to give the first of the first calf so that God will give you multiple calves afterwards. And many people think that in pre-Moses times, they would actually, or maybe even in Moses times, they would give the firstborn males. Because in Judaism, you have this ceremony at the age of 30 days where you have to redeem the firstborn male child from the priesthood. And probably, or theoretically, better than probably, the firstborn male was maybe sacrificed. But later they changed that to having the firstborn male given over to the priests to serve them in the temple. And then people realized that's just a bad use of my firstborn male child. So they said, look, we'll just give the priest some money and we'll keep the kid. So today, if you're in the traditional end of Judaism, I mean, I grew up in that world. So when I was 30 years old, my parents gave $5 silver to the rabbi in order to get me back. I think they thought it was a bad exchange after a while. You could, like, in your teenage, you can't get a teenager, you go back to the rabbi, go, look, you know, just give me the $5 back. You can take them now. But they still do that. And when my son was born, I was in the Reform movement then, and they don't do that. But my parents called and said, your uncle and your aunt are coming to Cincinnati for that ceremony. And I said, oh, sure. Well, no problem. It's scheduled for the 30th day. Here's the date. And then I had to go back and go, what the hell? Look it up in the books. And we had the first Reform redemption ceremony because I wasn't going to get away with not doing that in my family. So you have to give the firstborn over to God. 6 days you'll work, and the seventh day you'll desist. That's the Sabbath. You should celebrate the festival of weeks, which is called Shavuot, literally weeks, and it's a celebration of it's a harvest celebration. And then it just goes through all these specifically Jewish things that you'd never put on a courthouse. It's all the Jewish holidays, all that kind of stuff. And then it says, you shall not slaughter my blood offering while in the possession of leavened food. That's for Passover. So if you have leaven in the house, you can't do the sacrifice. Nor may a feast offering on the Passover festival be left overnight until morning. If there are leftovers, you'll just have to throw them out. You can't keep them and save it for the next day, which is what I normally do. And then it goes on about harvest issues. And then the last thing it says, this is number 10, and there are 10 of them. This is number 10. Do not cook a kid in its mother's milk. And that's the origin of kosher in Judaism, that you don't mix meat and milk, because here in this 10th of the 10, real 10 commandments, God says to Moses, and Moses is writing it down on these tablets, do not cook a calf in its mother's milk. Now, kosher today is way beyond just that idea. And in Judaism, we have this story that we say, and Moses goes up to get these commandments, and God says, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. And Moses says, oh, okay, we shouldn't mix milk and meat. And God says, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. And Moses says, oh, yeah, okay, we should have separate dishes, meat dishes and milk dishes and meat silver and milk silver. Silverware, and God says, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. Oh, and like for holidays, we ought to have special dishes for the holidays that are meat and milk, so that's like 8 sets of dishes. And then God says, do not boil a calf in its mother's milk. And then Moses says, oh, right. If you eat meat, you have to wait 3 hours before you can have milk. But if you have milk, you only have to wait 2 hours before you can have meat. And then God says, do not, oh, whatever. So, the rabbis just expand these ideas out and out and out. But those are the Ten Commandments, and I listed them for you in the little sidebar. And then it says in verse 26, right after this happens, this ends verse 25, then God says to Moses, write these words for yourself. For according to these words have I sealed a covenant with you and Israel. He, Moses, remained with God for 40 days and 40 nights. He didn't eat bread. He didn't drink water. He wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. The only way that paragraph makes sense, coming right after the 10 things I just, summarized for you and that I listed in the sidebar, the only way that makes sense is if what Moses is writing down are those 10 things about the Jewish holidays and the Jewish dietary law. Nothing about don't lie, don't steal, none of those things. That's not the Ten Commandments. That's not what Moses wrote down on the tablets. When Moses descended, I'm just reading a little bit more, when Moses descended from Mount Sinai with the two tablets in the hands of Moses as he descended from the mountain, Moses did not know that the skin of his face had become radiant when he spoke to God. His face is glowing. Unfortunately, when they translated the Hebrew Bible into Greek, it says, where the Hebrew says, beams of light are shining off of his face. In the Greek, it says horns of light. And that's where you get Michelangelo's statue with Moses with the horns. It's just bad Greek translation of the original Hebrew text. And that's where you get all the notions that Jews have horns, and therefore they're of the devil, and all the anti-Semitism that ultimately leads to the Holocaust. It's all from a mistranslation. But it's so real. This is why the Bible is such an important book. I had, when I was a rabbi with a congregation back in the 80s and 90s, one of my congregants went to college, University of Florida, and she had a roommate who had never met a Jew before, and they hit it off really nicely. And after a few months together, her roommate said, you know, we're really good friends. I wonder if you could do me a favor. Show me your horns. And my friend said, what is she talking about? I have no horns. But she believed, growing up in her church, that all Jews had horns because we were connected somehow to the devil. But what it really says is that Moses' face is beaming, and so he covers it with a cloth so that it doesn't scare the people because they're blinded by the reflection of the divine off of his face. And then, you know, because Moses speaks these words of God, and those are the Ten Commandments. How did we get the other ones? If you read the Bible, which we just did very quickly, it's clear that the commandments on the tablets that Cecil B. DeMille gave us, and the, you know, and the original, the big giant ones that were so controversial, they were a movie promo thing. For the Ten Commandments movie. How did we get those Ten Commandments?
The book is always better.
The book is always better. No, I think the movie was actually better than the book. But but it's because we told that, we took Moses at his word without realizing it was just the words of Moses. And we ignored, because no one actually reads the Bible, we ignored the actual text where God gives the actual Ten Commandments. Moses comes down the mountain, and instead of admitting that simply God is just yanking his chain up and down, he comes up with these ten things. And some of them are brilliant. I mean, we're going to get to this in the talk back section, what to do with them. But he, simply to save face, in the context of the story, he gives us these commandments. Now, I don't believe this is history. I believe it's fiction. I believe oral stories that people told. Whoever originated the story came up with some pretty good ideas in the Ten Commandments that we think of the Ten Commandments, which aren't the Ten Commandments. So it spoke to us, but it has nothing to do with the Bible itself in the sense that God didn't give those. So knowing the Bible actually frees us from so much ignorance that people associate with the Bible, but they don't call it ignorance. They call it the Word of God, and they call it truth, when in fact, it's none of that. So I'm going to stop with this. I just wanted to lay all these facts out for you. And then when we come back and talk back, we'll talk about the impact of the Ten Commandments, how we can understand them today, and we'll take a look at my own rendition of them. So thank you very much for listening to that, and we'll move on.